It's time for our weekly catch-up with ACT Party Deputy Leader Brooke Van Velden.
So this week is going to be split up into two parts. So in this first part, we're going to be talking about Ihu Mātou and the newly announced health authority that was put out by the Labour government this morning, which includes getting rid of all the DHBs, having four regional areas, and also having an independent Māori authority. And then when we discuss Ihu Mātou, we're talking about how the Auditor General has said that the purchase of the land at Ihu Mātou was unlawful. And I'll just talk to Brooke about that. So here's a little chat.
Oh, look, we're broadly in favour with a lot of what the government has just proposed. Part of our ACT Party policy is in fact the amalgamation of DHBs. So we're actually really heartened to see that that is where the government is going. I'm surprised that they've gone quite as far as they have, but I have to say it is a welcome change. The only issue I have is thinking about how does this actually change what it is like to be a patient in New Zealand. You know, a lot of what this health reform and shake-up is about is administrative change. I really want to see more details about what this means for a person when they go into their local hospital. Are they going to be seeing the same doctor under the same facilities with the same medication? Where are any of the changes there? And I haven't seen anything about how this could potentially change waiting lists, whether there'd be use of better technology and more modern medicines. All it really is an amalgamation of the administrative burden, which is a good thing, but I think they could have actually asked, how does this help a person on the ground trying to access healthcare?
I'm guessing we're probably going to see a lot more from the government on this. I imagine this is going to be one of the biggest things to happen in the next 3 years of this government. Now, one of the other big things around this move was the introduction of the Māori Health Authority. How does ACT feel about this?
Yeah, well, this is one area where I do have a concern because, of course, the minister came out and said we are finally going to get one nationwide healthcare system. But ultimately, he then, in another turn of phrase, said, and then we're going to create a separate one for Māori. I don't see how those two things stack up. In one case, you're saying, yep, we're all together. It doesn't matter where you live in this country, we are all one people. And then on the other hand, you're saying, but we're also separate. I think what would be better is acknowledging the fact that, yes, we do have a treaty. Of course, we need to be looking out for Māori healthcare issues and acknowledging that there are differences and different types of care that may be needed. But also going further than that and saying, you know what, there are actually more than two races in this country. We do have Chinese, we have Indian, we have a whole range of ethnic minorities. There are over 200 different ethnicities. Why are we basing one on white Pākehā and one on Māori? We should amalgamate all together and get more tailored, individualised care under one system.
Some of the thinking behind this is that as we've gone as society, we've seen that a Māori approach can help Māori because in a lot of cases they are disproportionately affected. We see in our prison systems having a Māori approach can help with creating better outcomes, and there are specific issues that put forward for Māori and they are more disproportionately affected by health issues. So surely this isn't this a move in the right direction to make sure that those who we are seeing the most in our health system are getting care that is tailored towards them?
I think it's a good intention. I really do think we need to have more individualised, tailored care to the needs of people when they're presenting at hospital. But I just put you this one very clear example. One of our ACT Party caucus is Māori, Karen Shaw. Her husband is Cambodian. So her children are half Māori, half Cambodian. What healthcare system would they then fall under? Would they fall under the National Health Authority or would they fall under the Māori Health Authority? And I think it's unclear why we need two separate authorities when, in fact, people aren't actually that simple and you can't just shove people in different boxes. I think we need to acknowledge there are differences in different population groups. but that we should be able to, under one system, have the ability to look at all of those differences and have all of that information in one agency so that we can see where those differences are in society and how we can tailor information and technology and better healthcare to people, rather than trying to separate people based on whether they are one or a second race.
Okay, so moving on to our next topic for this week, we're talking about Ihumātau. So the Auditor General has stated that the purchase of Ihumātau was unlawful. Now, in ACT's eyes, is there any way that the government could justify the purchase of this land under the housing fund?
Oh, look, this one is just, I don't even know where to start with this. Ultimately, it is about private property rights, and the government never should have stepped in and been involved. But when they did step in, they did it illegally, unlawfully. And you'll note that even the Prime Minister came out yesterday and said, no, we didn't. We did everything right. So in that instance, who is right there? Is it the Prime Minister, or is it in fact the Auditor General saying that it was a misappropriation of funds and the government shouldn't have done it? I would go with the Auditor General, who is obviously not political. And taking over land and ownership should not be a political position. We do want to uphold private property rights in New Zealand. And this has opened a huge can of worms, and I'm very glad to see that the Auditor General has actually acknowledged that it was a problem and that ultimately the government needs to front up with the fact that they made a mistake.
So the Auditor General has spoken out about it being made unlawfully. So shouldn't we be focusing on making sure that the return of important land doesn't have to go through processes like these in the future, making sure that the return of land is being done lawfully?
I think there are two issues there. I think, firstly, yes, the government isn't above the law. I mean, they're the people who make the laws in the first place, so to not know that they're breaking their own law is just incredible. It shows the lack of depth of skill and analysis that is in our current government. The second issue is whether or not we should be getting involved with what were full and final treaty settlements. And I would say that this opens a whole can of worms that should never have been touched because it was between two different people and not the government.
So that was Brooke Van Velden from the ACT Party. Now there is a second part to this interview. We're just going to have a short little break just to break it up for you guys. So here's a few ads.
Can anyone explain why the modern day whales are so big?
The Wire.
Welcome back to The Wire with James. It is currently at 10 to 1, and we're just going to have the last little bit of my talk with Brooke Van Velden from the ACT Party, and we're going to be chatting about in this section about hate speech, and it happens, it goes. Let's hear it. Okay, so moving on to our final topic for today, we're talking about hate speech. So ACT has opposed the hate speech legislation which was put forward this week. So I just want to ask, what comes under the umbrella for free speech for the ACT Party?
Well, for us it's quite clear that to have a society where people are able to express themselves fully and have a culture where we're actually striving for self-improvement, you have to be a place where you're allowed to express yourself. But of course, there is always that little asterisk that says, you can't be allowed to incite violence against another person. And I think that is proper. You know, free speech doesn't mean you can go out and do every single thing you want. For example, you shouldn't be able to go into a crowded theatre and shout fire and create riots and violence. I think that is where we do have our thresholds. What the government is coming out and saying with these hate speech laws is it should be based on opinion rather than a subjective fact of this person has breached principle, you know, that they've incited violence against another person. And no one that I can find in the government can actually speak to specific examples of what it is in black and white that would be banned. And I think that raises a huge amount of issue because is it unpopular opinion of the day? Is it unpopular political opinion that could potentially end up getting you a 3-year prison sentence. I think we need to see some concrete examples from this government about what would be in and out of favour or what would be criminalised, because it's not enough for political commentators to go on the news on the weekend and say, well, we know hate speech when we see it. No, we don't. It's very subjective.
So would racist, homophobic or sexist comments come under the umbrella of free speech for the ACT Party?
Well, those are really, really interesting perspectives. So I point to one which I know challenges a lot of people, but you've always got to look at these examples to see, well, what side would be right? I mean, you look at different waves of feminism, and I see this happens on Twitter all the time. Some people saying, well, how do you define what is a lesbian? Is it a woman who likes women, or can you define that as a woman who likes women with that other woman being somebody who has, you know, male genitalia? Both sides of this argument would claim that the other person is inciting some form of violence or a form of homophobia or, you know, a form of hatred against a different group of people. For the government to get involved and say one side of that is right versus the other side being wrong, I think that paints a very dangerous picture about where we want to go as a society and a form of cancel culture in criminal law. And I don't want to see us going down that track. I think we need to be able to have healthy debate, but to easily paint one side as homophobic, I don't think is actually as black and white as it seems.
So in some of those cases, someone is being hurt and could incite violence. I mean, we see definitely marches and protests against homophobia and so forth. So where does the line for hate speech start then?
Yeah, and that's a really good point. And I don't think we have seen enough detail from the government yet to say that this law wouldn't lead to unintended consequences of people who were never supposed to fall under what the government thought it was pointing out as hate speech. And potentially it's the people who are calling for it the most that may end up getting affected by it. And I just take you back to one of the foundations of our country, which is Kate Sheppard. And she, at that time of women's suffrage, was painting a very unpopular opinion that women should have more rights. At that time, even other women were against her, and that was based on gender politics, right? So is it possible that in our current environment, or even back then, that she could have been imprisoned for an unpopular opinion based on gender stereotypes and gender norms,
so
because she was willing to challenge the status quo?
So where does ACT see the rule for hate speech start? Where does ACT see it as a party?
So we believe it should be based on incitement to violence, and where it is black and white in the law that somebody said that person or a particular group of people should be, you know, punished or should have people come out against them to cause death or harm to those people. It's not in a case where somebody says something that is deemed an unpopular opinion at the time and has people essentially wanting to cancel them or shut down their debate.
So what about the situation with Mike Hallin, who has said that he would go around burning down mosque by mosque until he is taken down, and he donated to the ACT Party? So doesn't this put in a situation where ACT is getting support from someone who does support hate speech? Where does that put the ACT Party?
No, I completely disagree with your argument there. Look, I'm not going to get into really basic specifics of what should somebody or somebody not say. I would like you to put that to the government, whether that would fall under their hate speech laws. And I
In this case, they have he has not. Incited violence, and the ACT Party has accepted a donation from him. So where does that put the ACT Party?
I think you're putting two very separate things there together, and I completely disagree with your argument that somehow, because the ACT Party accepts donations from a range of people, and I don't actually know enough about this specific example, that we are in favour of people being able to say whatever they want. Ultimately, if somebody does go out there and say that mosques should be burnt down, I think that's absolutely disgraceful. It is disgraceful behaviour. I have no problem saying that. But that does not mean that I think, you know, just because I don't like this law that the government's passing, that I think people should be able to go out and say that.
That was Brooke Van Velden from the ACT Party.
That was Deputy Leader Brooke Van Velden from the ACT Party.